You are listening to an exclusive podcast from Pituitary World News.
Good morning. This is Dr. Lewis Blevins of Pituitary World News, podcasting today from the Sea Ranch, California, June 22nd, 2015. I spent a considerable amount of time this past weekend down by the sea, ambling amongst the rocks and on the beaches, and with water everywhere, I couldn't help but think of fluid and electrolyte disorders, namely hyponatremia and also diabetes insipidus. While out hiking, I thought of one of the first patients I had seen with diabetes insipidus when training at Hopkins, and I wanted to share that patient with you today. It was a middle-aged gentleman who had had a craniopharyngioma and undergone surgery for such, and I was consulted because they wanted to send him home, but they couldn't get control of his urine output. The first thing I did was review the medical record, and the neurosurgery residents had been writing in the chart that his serum sodium was 142, and then after that they were proclaiming no diabetes insipidus. So I thought, fair enough, but he reportedly has an excessive urine output, so I'll go take a look. So I walked to the patient's bedside and found him in the bathroom standing at the toilet with his penis in one hand urinating, and he had taken some surgical tubing, the rubber tubing, and hooked it to the faucet of the sink, and with the other hand was drinking water that was coming out of the spigot at a fairly good rate, almost as fast as one could drink, so to speak. And he told me that the prior days he had kept up with his urine output, but he decided that was difficult and he just needed to do what it was going to take to quench his thirst. So I took a look at the bedside chart and saw that his daily urine output for the prior 3 days was about 24 liters. And of course, the math is pretty easy. That's 1 liter per hour. So to me, it was a clear-cut case of diabetes insipidus, and why didn't the neurosurgery resident recognize it as such? Well, I think the problem here is the neurosurgery resident expected the patient to be hypernatremic, and the patient's serum sodium level was normal. And of course, the reason that it was normal is that patients with diabetes insipidus will drink to thirst and to try to quench thirst, and they will tend to maintain a serum sodium at the osmolality that reflects their thirst threshold. And in this patient, that serum sodium level was 142 milliequivalents per liter. So let's review the cardinal features of diabetes insipidus. And they are thirst, which this patient had, polyuria, which this patient also had, and passage of dilute urine. I took a look at his urine. It was basically as clear as the water that he was drinking from the faucet. And then last but not least is the polydipsia, which is actually the term for drinking excessive amounts of fluids in response to the thirst. Polyuria is defined as the passage of more than about 30 milliliters of water per kilogram of body weight. So a 70 kilogram person, which used to be the normal weight for a male, should really have no more than about 2.1 liters out in a 24-hour period. And anything more than that is considered polyuria. This definition is very important when looking at children who weigh very little and can be extremely polyuric, even though their urine output may be a liter and a half or 1 liter. And many adults would consider that to be a normal urine output. So again, basing the decision about polyuria on weight is very critical and important to making the diagnosis. The severity of the vasopressin deficiency actually defines the degree of polyuria and subsequent thirst and polydipsia. This patient clearly had full-on vasopressin deficiency and really is an example of how severe diabetes insipidus can be. Many patients have lesser degrees of vasopressin deficiency and maybe have 6 to 8 liters of urine out a day. They're still very uncomfortable and still need to be treated. And, of course, vasopressin replacement in the form of DDAVP is the treatment of choice in this day and age. I have found that when it comes to treatment, that doing so to result in a urine output of about 2 to 3 liters a day usually takes care of the comfort in most patients. Some patients can tolerate up to 4 liters of urine output a day, especially those who've had chronic diabetes insipidus and are simply just used to it. The patient we've been talking about was treated with the DDAVP in the form of the Rhinal tube, and he received 10 micrograms twice daily, and that resulted in a urine output of about 3 liters a day. He slept for about 30 hours after we started vasopressin, and I think he might have been up once or twice to urinate, but he was grateful for the treatment, and it was a lesson learned for the neurosurgery team to recognize that a serum sodium level alone is not the test to diagnose diabetes insipidus. It really is truly a clinical syndrome and a clinical picture.
In patients with disease of the hypothalamic and pituitary unit. And lastly, when it comes to diagnosing diabetes insipidus, the clinical response to treatment is often the proof in the pudding, as they say, and clearly those patients who respond to vasopressin and have normalization of their urine output and their thirst, etc., without becoming hyponatremic at first are the ones who truly had diabetes insipidus to begin with. Interestingly, those patients who have primary polydipsia or psychogenic polydipsia, if you give them vasopressin, they will become hyponatremic right off. So it's an important thing to be sure that the patient probably truly has diabetes insipidus before you use vasopressin in someone. This is where I've found the serum sodium level to be helpful, because those with primary polydipsia usually do not have a serum sodium level over 140, whereas those with diabetes insipidus usually will be over 140 or whatever their thirst threshold might be. Those of you who have followed Pituitary World News for some time know that we have a lot of information on both our Facebook page and our website at www.pituitaryworldnews.com on diabetes insipidus, so I'd encourage you to take a look at some of those documents at this time if you want to learn more, and certainly share those with your friends, family members, and primary physicians. And, of course, many of you participated in our Diabetes Insipidus Survey, and those results are also published on our website. Thank you for listening, and have a wonderful day.